Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter.
And thank you, everybody. Welcome to When Pigs Fly. This is Andrew Fetter, and hoping you're all having a glorious, glorious day. Crazy lately with retrograde. Seems like things get delayed here and there. But we all have to endure it, don't we, at some strands here. I do have some special announcements to make, upcoming events, before I have my illustrious guest come on to explain certain things about my calendar and her very unique book. But first, let you all know, as you know, tomorrow I am having a special event here in the Los Angeles area for doing a book signing event in Sherman Oaks. Tomorrow at March 17th, Saturday, from 1 to 4 p.m. I'll actually have all three of my books there at the event, When the Angels Have Risen, The Heretic, and Spirit. And the event is being held at Psychic Eye Bookstore at 13435 Ventura Boulevard. It's Sherman Oaks, California, 91423, and their phone number is 818-906-8263. That is in the area of Woodman and Ventura, for those who are familiar with the area. Please come on down. Say hello. And then I'm having on the following Saturday, that's next week, March 24th, between 1 and 1:30, I've been honored to give a special speaking engagement regarding Kabbalah and its essence, the Merkava in you, what it really is. Also be doing some signings of my book there as well for Book Spirit, and this is for WordFest. And this is the WordFest 2012 in Ojai, and I'll be doing the discussion and speaking engagement at Soul Center. That's at 311 North Montgomery, Ojai, 93023, and their number there is 805-640-8222. Again, that's at Soul Center, 311 North Montgomery. I'll be there from 1 to 1:30 doing my speaking engagement. I hope you all come down. And then, of course, next week, I have a very special guest here on When Pigs Fly. I have, once again, Carrie Fezza, internationally known astrologist, intuitive, and she'll be giving her updated analysis of what we expect for the next 3 months. That will, of course, enshrine us. So I hope y'all catch that as well. Very interesting that I have my special guest here. One instance of what I want to bring up is because there's been a lot of misconstruing and, you know, swaying, and everybody's wondering about 2012 and, you know, whether a lot of hyperbole has been noted in that, and there's a lot of misconcepts of what the Mayan calendar is and what's a... So what else but bring a real good expert who knows what's going on. Besides that, she... is in her book has a deep explanation of the esoterics held within the Mayans, which is fascinating, which I would love to hear and elaborate on. Welcome, Brigitte Razin. How are you doing?
Thank you, Andrew. Thanks so much for having me on today. It's a pleasure.
Thank you as well. First of all, I got to have a question. So people out there who are not familiar with you, I have heard of you in the past, actually. And I understand that what quite fascinating is, I know you've had a very long career through the film situation. I know you from, how did you get from going, studying in Stanford, going to AFI, American Film Institute, and then moving on into... getting into the esoterics and learning, getting into Mesoamerica understandings and philosophies and culture and everything, and religious views or spirituality or correctly. How did you get to, from one to one? it's like two different worlds, it seems like.
Yeah, it does seem like a rather circuitous route, but actually it was a fairly straight line, to believe it or if you believe it or not. I always tell people that I was born a writer. It's not something I do, it's just something that I am. And as a writer and a poet, you kind of explore everything that there is in the world, because everything is fascinating and everything has a story. So for me, it's actually not quite so surprising to go from a film production career to what we do today, which is design and communications for sustainability. And so the way that the Mayan Calendar Project happened in the very beginning is in 2006, we had an author called Dr. Carl Kalaman, who many of your listeners will be very familiar with, come to us and say, I'd like to design a website for the Mayan calendar. So he was the impetus for this project. But because there was no budget, we suggested to him, well, we can't exactly do it pro bono because it's too large, but why don't we raise the money? And he liked that idea. So together we did raise the money. We built a very small site, which basically put forth the graphics that are, you know, the blue wheel that is now so well known and so popular, that Tolkien calculator that's on our site. And that went on for about 3 years. And then in 2009, Carl by then was really not involved at all with the website. And we decided, well, we've got to make a decision. We can't just let this languish out there on the website, on the internet. So we either ramp it up or we shut it down. And I wasn't about to let something like this shut down because it was becoming quite popular. So we invested a whole bunch more of our time and resources and built it up, put it on a content management system, put it out on the social media platforms, and actually started reaching out to the Maya themselves, because we felt that, as you said in your intro, that there is so much misinformation and disinformation out there about the Maya, and the Maya don't have any resources. They don't have the marketing muscle. They don't have the technology. They don't have a way to voice their concerns and or their messages out to the world. So we wanted to be one of the platforms that gives them that power. And it's, you know, it's been going great. I mean, I have to say they're one of the daykeepers, the one who I communicated mainly for the book, which I'll talk about a little later. He is now connected on Facebook. He's got YouTube going on. I mean, I think it's wonderful that the Maya, at least this particular daykeeper, is very connected.
So it's sort of getting more merging the information out and everything. See, it's sort of interesting that you did this, because I've been involved actually with the Hopi, and there's been a lot of miscommunication from what their beliefs and the worlds, because there's actually two systems what they talk about in the worlds. There's one actually a physical world, but then they're also talking in a spiritual context. And then the doomsday effect, which is not what the Hopi talk about. And, you know, and I saw the same situation when I was reading your book, when you talk about this is a long count, which I want you to, if you can, explain calendars. Because when people hear Mayan calendar, they first assume there's only one calendar.
Right.
And that's also incorrect. But so basically there's a lot of misinformation and hype and things. And I think it's actually more to do with, and I noticed even talking to even amongst a lot of that Native American elders, specifically Apache that I encountered, how a lot of Western, especially Christian ideologies and revelations, that which is they're sort of the doomsday thing, how they try to merge other spirituality concepts and understandings of Native Americans, in this case Mayan, as well as Hopi, into their own philosophy, like example, creating a Jesus. The Hopi have the Bahana. They always have the triasaur correlation, instead of just letting it be what the information, their belief is, instead of trying to match the round peg into a square pole. And that's what I see, that a lot of the understandings are what happen. So let me go back to this, because can you... I saw an interview also about you to explanation of the 2012, and then, but before doing so, maybe it's better to you if you could explain the three different calendars, and that way people understand what those are and how the relationship, because it works like almost like what do you call it, like almost like a rotisserie like a gears, almost like how their calendars work, right?
Yeah. Well, there are actually, yes, there are actually more than three, but the three that are most well-known, especially among those who do have a bit of a clue about the Mayan calendar system, basically the Mayan timekeeping system is based on a very different relationship with time, and I think I should talk a little bit about that before I get into the calendars themselves.
Right.
Because, you know, our Western society is a very business-oriented, very linear-oriented mentality. It's a psyche. It's not just a society. It's an entire psyche, and our relationship with time also explains our relationship with each other and with nature. So when you think about the kind of calendar that we live with, it tells you a lot about our society and our values. So the Maya, of course, these are the classical, the ancient Maya, which none of us, not even the living Maya, will ever know, right? I mean, they're just too far in the past. And so it's very tempting to sort of romanticize them. But from what we do know about them, they were absolutely fascinated with time and with the events that time rules, such as the movement of stars and planets and the sun, and what the way that life grows and dies on this planet. I mean, basically, you can't have anything happen without time. So they were quite obsessed with it, but they also respected it quite deeply. It wasn't just, hey, you know, let's go have coffee at 12 noon at Starbucks. It was, this day has a ruling power, or ruling Nawal, as they say. And so that's where the Tzolk'in, the first calendar system that I'd like to talk about, comes in. That is a system of 20 day signs and 13 numbers. And the way that they are conceived of in the Mayan calendar, in the Tzolk'in, is that the numbers tend to have a feminine nature, while the day signs have a masculine nature. And so when you combine those in kind of a configuration, if they were all to sort of square dance together, right, they would be 260 pairs, 13 numbers and 20 day signs. And you could call them little spiritual marriages, kind of like the yin-yang concept. Not quite black and white. It's more, if you think of the concept of complementing each other, and that's what a true marriage really should be anyway. And so that's what the Tzolk'in is based on, is these 260 combinations. And that cycle of 260 just goes on forever and ever. So the first misconception about 2012 is, first, December 21st has to do with the long count calendar, not the Tzolk'in. And number two, even if it did have quite a lot to do with it, it's pointless to say it's going to end, because the 260 days are not based on a solar cycle. They have nothing to do with astronomical behaviors of any kind, of any orbits. And so it's just an endless cycle of days. Now, the other systems, the Hob, for example, was based on the solar year. And that is a period of 18 months, with a five-day period of rest where you're not really supposed to do anything. And that's called the Wayeb. And so that adds up to 365 days. And that calendar was used for very administrative type things, very, you know, practical, real life things, such as I'm sorry?
Like harvesting their own, like keeping their farming systems, harvesting.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Anything that has to do with even accounting back then, you know, whatever you had to do accounting with in ancient Maya times, you used the Hob for. Now, the long count measured vast stretches of time, and you know, to be exact, 5,125 years at a pop. So no wonder that, because this current cycle that we're in of 5,125 years is coming to an end on December 21st, no wonder that everyone is all up in a tizzy about it. But to be honest, the Maya really stopped using this calendar about 1,000 years ago, from what my understanding is. So it's a defunct calendar that has nevertheless captured the imagination and the great fear of mainly a Christian-minded society. And I think that has to do with our inbred or inborn sense of guilt, you know, that whole concept of original sin. And so if you're born and raised with that, then you have this this nagging little voice in the back of your spiritual mind telling you, you know, one of these days the apocalypse is going to come.
Yeah, that was, it's embedded with the as they're in Christian society of having the end world of Revelation. So this has got to be the revelation that, you know, that's what you're talking about. That's embedded. So that's what I was saying earlier. They try to match things and sort of change things than what they really are. You know, that's what I was saying earlier. And that's what basically, like, so, because I hope you have the same ideology as what you're talking. In fact, they say that they're actually linked with, they're who I think called the part of the Parrot Clan and the Rainbow Clans that went down south with the Maya, how the Hopi couldn't consider them. But, so there's like the, that you're saying is basically, what I'm looking at all the three calendars basically is one is more of like a spiritual, like, a relationship, and the one is more administrative, and then the long one is just basically areas of understandings of things. But like you said, what was interesting, I liked what you said about linear time, which is what I gather, and the way I look at, and even from a Kabbalist and Taoist way of looking at things, is being in the moment of things when things are always in a cycle. Which is interesting that you said that, because everything in both Kabbalism and Taoism, everything's in a circle, and even time is circulated. It's not linear. Like what's happening now has already happened in the future and as well as the past. And so it takes out the linear concept of time. And we tend to live in our society both in the past and the future and never in the present. And that's what I thought was really astounding in your book, too, that how the Maya seem to be living in the moment but contemplating the future at the same time. So therefore, they're like being in the moment of things. That's what it seemed like.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I really hope that, you know, all this technological progress we're seeing, one of these days somebody comes up with a way to travel back in time, or at least to, you know, send a fiber optic cable back there, because imagine the things that you can see. And it would be, I think, just absolutely fascinating to be able to somehow view previous cultures, not just the Maya, but the Egyptians or the Olmecs. You know, the Mayan calendar, in fact, was not invented by the Maya. I don't know if many people know this, but the Olmecs prior to them had already a working version of this calendar. And now they're coming up with some research in Central America that suggests that it could be even older than the Olmecs. So it's a fascinating system of time, but for the peoples of Mesoamerica basically have this tremendously long tradition of respecting and working with time. And having, you know, people ask me, well, what is sacred time, which you talk about in your book? And I always explain, it's actually not that difficult. We each have our own sacred time every single day, but we just don't know that it's sacred. Things like, you know, say you come home from work and you want to have a nice bath with some candles, or you want to meditate, or you want to do yoga, or you just want to be on your own sitting in the forest doing nothing. That time is your sacred time. And I think it's, we really need more of it in our lives.
So in the, I mean, like they say, sit back and smell the roses. Don't, you know, we get caught up in our daily lives. We need to, you know, that's what it, you know, it's basically what you're saying. We most of the people get caught up in their daily lives. Either they're more actually fear-based situations, but they're constantly worrying about what tomorrow, or by their fear, oh my God, what's going to happen to our economy? What's going to happen to this? What's going to happen? How I'm going to feed my kids? What's happening with my Social Security? What's happening with my health insurance? What's going to happen? It's always something about, and then there's always the fear issues that even surround that immediate concern. So people consistently are projected so much fear that they're like being like little hamsters on a wheel running around, and they're never being able to step off that little wheel, and that's not reality. They're basically in reality, they're not living in reality. No, they're living, because what happens is, you know, and it's coming to a head, but people, that's why I think people become more aware that that people come to a head of awareness that even our society is not a reality. It's a made-up game. Our money itself is made-up. It's like Monopoly. When I have some friends of mine who are famous, pretty well-known in the industry, in the banking industry even, and I talk to some people and explain, they realize, no, it is a Monopoly game. and everybody's joined into it. And so they've created that thing that's a facade, and things have embellished upon one upon another, but another game is an illusion, and we live in an illusion. And then all of a sudden we're shocked when there's a major tornado or a major a hurricane or a major this that wipes our sight. Which literally, I believe, it's like the universe trying to show us, hey, through our suffering, hey, we're what is real? You know, that we're...
Yeah.
It doesn't describe whether you're black, white, green, yellow, what religion you're associated with, you know, there's no borders.
No, exactly. I completely agree. And, you know, to those people, I would say, you know what? I mean, let's say you're walking to your car in the morning, right? I mean, what does it cost you to just look up and say, hey, I'm passing by a tree, and look how amazingly gorgeous this tree is, and it's symmetrical, and it grew from a tiny little seed. I mean, all you have to do is just kind of, you know, within the 2 minutes it takes you to walk to your car, you can have an entire lifetime packed into those 2 minutes. And I think that's also sacred time. The sacred time has, in a way, no ending. It's the kind of time that you sense when, say, you're on vacation. And I don't know if this happens to everybody, but it definitely happens to me. I'm one of those people who has absolutely no trouble disconnecting. You know, just turn the cell phone off, don't bring the laptop, turn off. And when I am in a different place, whether it's, you know, a wild river or somewhere out in nature, just some completely different place, my sense of time actually expands, so that even if I'm away for, say, 5 days, 2 weeks, I come back and it feels like I've been away for 2 months, because there has been so much deeper observation and kind of a deeper or how should I say it? When time infuses into you, you sense a lot more of it. You get a lot more experience out of that time. I don't know if that makes any sense. It's just, it's how you perceive and how you live time.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's like I said, you're basically getting attached, beginning within the moment. Like because I usually, like, I have people at consult all the time, and I tell them, and this is a Taoist way of looking at things, but they go, there's like three things. They go, there's like about three bubbles. The bubble of past, the bubble of present, the bubble of future. And what you try to do is keep them actually all the same. You don't live just in the past and not be in the moment or in the future. Those are the people like, oh, I regret what happened to me, poor me, kind of thing. You don't live only in the future trying to, oh, what's going to happen tomorrow. And the general public, which our society happens to do things in the past, and they worry about things in the future, and they're never in the moment. And so that's what, you know, you have to raise that. And of course, the guy who just lives in total in the moment is the guy who smokes the joint sitting on his couch. So you have that. They see all three of them. Like, you have a direction is towards your future. That's your future is your direction. You learn from your past, which you're from your past karma, and you're living, being the moment of things, which is sort of really neat, because I think what you're doing is making that bubble in the center bigger, which people, so it's all evened out, which is a really good method. So I thought it was really unique and purposeful that people should apply that. But I got a question for you. When I was looking, trying to figure out your book, it was like, holy hell, columns, and I'm dyslexic. And I was trying to figure out times and dates and stuff like that, how to correlate the running. Could you explain how to utilize how, because I saw the system of numbers and the system of dates, and then I used the calculator, and I had when I looked at the columns in the book, it came out different than the calculator. So then I thought, wow, I must have been doing something wrong. But the calculator is really cool. I looked up my birthday. I didn't realize I'm on number 8, which was pretty cool. And then when I read that, that's actually pretty cool, because then you can look up when, you know, in your book showing, hey, you're a number 8, what date that corresponds and what that means and all that stuff. I thought it was pretty cool. So how do you, would somebody, you know, I know people don't have the book in front of them and do get it. It's called the Serpent and the Jaguar Living in Sacred Time. And how would you utilize it in like practical, like, okay, what's tomorrow? Today's 16th. What would be, how would I look up the 17th?
Okay. So today is 10 Ahau. And Ahau is by some people considered to be the last day sign in the lineup. Although it's not really the last. So let me talk a little bit about how to live with these day signs and how to interpret these things. Okay. So the first thing that I would suggest to people is to let go of any idea of, you know, this is the X day sign. This is the eighth, this is the first, whatever. It doesn't matter because it's a circle. So okay. If you approach a circle, whether you're approaching a merry-go-round or you're approaching a planetary system, if you're, you know, an alien, it doesn't matter. It's a circle. So you just kind of jump in. I mean, there's no beginning or end. So you just enter, and that's what I say in the book is, what, you know, whether you're an expert in the Mayan calendar and the Tolkien, or you're a complete novice, and this is the very first time, you can literally start today. So if today is Tenahau, there are a number of ways to do it. The reason that we have the book and the mobile app and the website is because people are connected in many different ways. So whether you've got our mobile app or the book, the mobile app is a little bit easier, obviously, because it does the work for you. You just turn it on, you fire it up, and it'll tell you it's Tenahau, and it'll give you the energy of the day. In the book, you have to actually go, you have to go find it. And, you know, when you first start, it is a little bit difficult because you have to find what Tresena you're in. And Tresena is a 13-day period. It's like a Mayan week. I mean, our weeks are 7 days, so the Mayan weeks are 13 days. And they're basically, they're based on the numbers because there are 13 numbers. That's how long the weeks are. And so in a way, you could say that the Tolkien has 20 weeks of 13 days each. So currently we are in the Chuen Tresena, which is the Tresena of the monkey. It's a Tresena, it's a 13-day period that is governed by the spirit of creativity, movement, motion, anything that is associated with creativity, in fact, even marriage and pregnancy. So if you have the book and you're not connected, it's very easy. Once you know that you're in the Tresena of Chuen, you look it up. And I'm looking it up right now so that I can tell you what page it's on. So Chuen is on page 223. So you just turn to that page, and then you find the 10th day of that Tresena, and that is Tenahau. So, you know, once you start, ideally you live with the book every single day, and then you don't lose your place. But if you ever do, that's a good way to do it. Now, the tables that you kind of got hung up on, Andrew, in the back of the book, that's kind of like a last resort. There is an instruction, there's a page in the book that I think it's in the How to Use This Book chapter, which explains exactly how to work the tables. But I myself don't do it because it's a pain.
Confused me. I was doing, actually, you know what? I looked at the back and I went by the dates, and it was pretty simple. I understood 13 days, and then you count 1, 2, 3, 4, where the day, and that's your fell. And it was pretty easy. And then I tried looking at the calendar report, and I go, whoa. And then I tried figuring that, and I got totally lost. So then I went back and then actually hit your calculator, and then, okay, screw that. I'll just use the type in. And by the way, it's good that you're doing on the – it's on the app. On probably now everybody's going to get their new iPad 3. So, but that's really cool that you have that like that. And it's like true what you said is that what I read in there is it's interesting is you contemplate the next day, which was really interesting. Like today, you look at the energy for tomorrow and you contemplate it. So you're basically being here then there at the same time, it seems like. Now, is there like I'm curious is what the Mayan contemplate, how they utilize their, because I'm certainly they do some sort of methodology of meditating, or just sort of just wherever they are, or is it kind of a reflection? It seems like more of a reflection. Is that what it is?
Well, what the Maya do, first they, in order to be a true day keeper, you need to go through a period of initiation. And they're quite serious about it. You know, I mean, I never claim, and never have claimed that I'm a day keeper. I am not. I'm not a Mayan day keeper. And so, but what happens is the Maya, because they want their calendar to be available for everybody, it is, after all, a personal calendar, they have no issue with anybody living with the calendar and interpreting it for themselves. That's actually what it's meant to be for. But when it comes to, you know, having like an official reading, you really should have it done by a real Maya daykeeper. And they'll go through a ceremony. You know, it depends on the daykeeper what kind of ceremony they want to do. Or you can talk to the daykeeper you're going to work with and explain what you're looking for. And they actually can do quite a, they can go quite deep. And this is where you start to get into more than just the Tzolk'in, but the entire universe of Mayan astrology. There are these seeds, these sacred seeds that they use to divinate the answers to your questions. They're called the Tzeit seeds. And apparently there's quite a bit of power that can be accessed with these ceremonies. And so, you know, they don't allow just anyone to do this, because you can kind of dial into some pretty powerful stuff, and you have to be careful when you handle these energies. But as you go deeper, you'll find that there are many, many levels, many currents, many depths to the Tzolk'in. And my favorite way of describing it is kind of like, you're probably familiar with the concept of fractals, right?
Mm-hmm.
So chaos, which fractals are basically little diagrams of chaos. And chaos is what actually underpins everything in creation. If we think about trees and the way the branches grow from the trunk, and the way that the leaves or the pine needles grow from those branches, or the curl of smoke or the formation of clouds, everything is governed by chaotic structures, which ironically, of course, includes both true chaos, randomness, and order. And so it's, you know, to me, that is true divinity. That is where beauty comes from. That is where music and mathematics and all these wonderful concepts that we live with, that should be sacred, and not be used by Wall Street for greed, but that's a whole other radio show. So the Tzolk'in actually follows these chaotic patterns. When you start to get into the Mayan chart, for example, you can do a 5-sign Mayan cross or Mayan destiny chart. You can do a 9-sign Mayan cross. You can do a composite chart with your partner. For example, you take your birth date and the chart for your birth date and your partner's, and you combine them into one, and you can read the energies for your relationship. So it's, you know, I mean, you can go so incredibly deep into it. And there's another book I would actually recommend for that, which is Ken Johnson's Mind Calendar Astrology. It's, we published that one as well, the latest edition. And he goes into all of these other levels, you know, whether it's your personal compatibility, your path of the feathered serpent, which you can do. It's kind of like a special personal meditative journey that you can go on, not a physical journey.
So actually, I was going to say too, though, it's a wrong term to even call it astrology, because it's not based on astrology, it's based on time. Because you're not looking at the moons and stars and planets. Oh, this is Gemini, this is in our Aries. This is actually based upon, it's a total way different looking. You're looking at time without, it has nothing to do with astrology. It's based upon.
Right. No, you're absolutely right about that. And I confess I'm using the term completely without, you know, using it properly. But yeah, it's astrology in the sense of that, you know, these are energies that exist out there in nature that we use to interpret our lives. So yes, it's not the correct term. It's more, you know, perhaps Mayan spirituality systems.
Yeah, or I mean, a horoscope would be even closer. But even that, yes, would be, that's actually more closer to it, because it seems it has nothing to do with, like I said, which I've always asked, which actually is pretty interesting to talk, because I always had questions about people, astrologers, even, you know, I have friends of mine who, like, and I have an esteemed guest, and she's a good friend of mine, come an astrologist, and I always question about astrology, because, you know, that light that you see on that star system was, by the time that light travels and you see it, is, that was yesterday, you know, how many thousands of years ago?
Right. That's right.
And then if you're born on the North Pole, guess what? You have no astrology. And what happens if you're born on an airplane? You have no astrology. If you're born on the moon, definitely not. So it throws it all out in the world. And originally, actually, astrology is more like a weather report on our weather patterns and when to harvest. And then the rulers took it over as meaning how to imply that kind of energy system. And then it became more personalized. But people take it too literally when it's just more like a weather report. But I see with this thing is not a weather report. It's more like it's a little bit different because it really is looking and getting to reality of really. It's really getting into Einstein's way of approach and quantum way of looking at the realities of time and space. So because you're joining yourself like in future at right now. And you're trying to be in the moment by looking at, and that's what it's saying by the layers you're talking about and the energies is looking at it from a different model. So, but now I understand actually now how to look that up, but it was pretty interesting looking up my date because I was reading what an 8 was and it was about, wow, that was pretty dead on.
Yeah. And so what's your day sign, Andrew?
I just came
okay. Maybe while we chat, you can do it again, and then I can tell you more.
Let's see, 1958.
Because 8 is actually a very stable number. It's a very propitious number. In fact, the Maya, the Quiche Maya of Momonstenango in Guatemala, which is where Don Rigoberto is from, the day keeper that that I've been chatting with when I was writing the book, 8 bots or Chuen, the monkey, that day is considered the first day of a cycle of the Tolkien, and they have, you know, all these celebrations and ceremonies. In fact, the day keepers perform ceremonies only on certain numbered days, and number 8 is one of them. So you've got a pretty good number.
Yeah, I maybe done it wrong before. Let me do it again. It's April 14th, 1958. I may have done it wrong, because now that I did it again, it kept on coming a different number. No, that came up at 10. Maybe I did something wrong.
Well, let's see. What did you say, April 14th?
Yeah, 1958.
Okay.
Nice, I was up at 10. God, it must be retrograde for sure.
Okay, so I'm getting a 10 Chik Chan for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, 10 has to do with human relationships. So it's no wonder that you're doing programs like this because you're connecting human beings all over the planet.
Huh.
Yes. And of course, Chik Chan is a very powerful sign. That's the serpent. That's one of the two... You know, the title of my book, The Serpent and the Jaguar, people always ask me, well, why the serpent and the jaguar? And I said, well, because first, they're probably, for me anyway, the two most powerful day signs in the entire Tolkien, the serpent and the jaguar, right? The jaguar carries all of the deeper mysteries, kind of the very feminine, dark, and I don't mean dark as a negative, but just... You know, if you think of the night and the potential of the night, mm-hmm. that's what the jaguar carries with him or her as she or he goes through the jungle. And the serpent, of course, my God, I mean, you know, talk about a mythical figure throughout all of humanity.
Right. Yeah, that's so interesting. Yeah. Let me get into another aspect I want to get into. I know we pushed it off because we got right into your book because I knew you skated off to it, but it was cool explaining what it is, you know, that part of it. I do want to get back into it because I know you were involved with a movie and dealing with shift of ages, basically. It was dealing about 2012, the reality of what 2012 was. Can you elaborate on that movie that you had? When did it come out? Because I think it was a few years back.
You mean Shift of the Ages?
Yeah.
Well, that has actually just been finished. It's been in production for quite a long time.
Because I see some pieces on YouTube.
Yeah, no, there are definitely pieces of it. You know, I mean... I'm actually only very indirectly involved with it. Steve Copeland is the director, And he has been working with Don Alejandro, who's the head of the Council of Elders of the Maya, of the Mayan Council. And there are about 400 elders there, and he's the head of that council. And so he's featured. It's basically a documentary that features him in a very significant way, and he explains sort of what this shift is all about, the shift of the ages. And it promises to be quite a beautiful film. So what we've done with Steve and his producers, we've basically helped to promote it, helped out in any way we could, but we haven't been involved in the actual production.
Because there's actually, I don't think it's the same movie, but there's actually a whole big movie. Actually has a friend of mine, Philip Coppin, was on it, called 2012 and the Mayan Prophecy and the Shift of the Ages. But it goes into bits of pieces. It brings in the Mayan calendar, but it also goes into I Ching. And they take all the new, they do this math thing, and they're trying to correlation between 2012 and all that, and show the energies of that. And then it goes into other stuff, which is some things I wanted to ask you about. And then we're dealing with the long count, actually, because that's what we're talking about. But they do talk about the token, and then also the hob. And they do talk about that, and they show how the similarities actually between I Ching calendar actually is even longer than the long count. And it was developed, I think, 10,000 years, 7,000 years ago, which shows you how people forget the Eastern world was really ahead of things.
Yes.
Origin. We often think of Europe always, and actually, well, the Greek philosophers were figuring out how to milk cows. Chinese were already, looking in the world mathematically.
Yeah, in fact, Europe was in the Dark Ages when the Maya had their classical period.
Yeah, that's another thing. That's true. I read something interesting about that. What would happen if the Aztec or the Maya, and they actually had the ability to, if they had actually invaded Europe at that time, what would have happened? It would have been different. It would have been a flip, because actually they were so far ahead.
Yeah. I wish in a way they had invaded Europe.
Yeah, that actually would have been better, but everything has a reason, I guess, but what I want to ask is that something was brought up, because this is what, in Van Daniken's book called Twilight of the Gods, it gets into ETs, and there's a place up in fact, I want to go see it, George Sakos speaks of it a lot, up in near Bolivia, it's called Pancho Pichu. Machu Picchu is right near there, but there's the Machu Picchu has the calendar, and they're talking that matches the Inca. That calendar matches with the Mayan calendar, and they start doing an interpretation. I'm talking about the long count. They're doing their own. The original interpretation was based upon the vocabulary. What he explained in his book was Maya was misinterpreted, because at the time the Maya language, when it was translated, there were no airplanes. So the guy who's in the little thing, they think that goes up in the world, I forgot his name, and they're talking about he's supposed to come back, and he talks about the nine gods and all that stuff. Now they reread it, and if they put it in today's language, then in retrospect, it's maybe that, it's all they're saying is, hey, they went and now they're coming back. It's nothing really all that profound, so I'm wondering, what do you think is in that thing? Because I know there's energy. Everything that has to do with our energy, it's in an esoteric way. But is it just, could it be just that simple? I mean, we often can make things more than they are, and maybe it is just that simple that, hey, it was just, hey, by the way, they took off this date, and you know what? This is the time when, yeah, they're coming back.
Yeah, I mean, it could be just as simple as that. And I'm wondering if you're referring to the Nazca lines, maybe? Those massive designs that you can only see from the air in Peru.
There's a city. God, I went out the book. I was going to get it back, and one of my neighbor's kids brought it, and I forgot to get it back. But in it talks about Machu Picchu, which is near where you're talking about. It's actually on Bolivia's side, and they have these symbols of the sun and everything, and it actually has the Meso. the long calendar, and it goes further. Actually, like you said, 5,000 years. Actually, this calendar goes, I think it was like 20,000 years back. Mm-hmm. But it works. It's the same calendar. And they start re-looking at it because it has such a long time. And this city, they figured it was built 10,000 years ago, and it's called the city that was built in one day by the Incas. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was questioning, because then, and while watching this film, and it was talking about the Maya itself within their own structure, they talk of the 2012, but they talk about these nine gods. Are you familiar with that understanding, with the nine gods that are supposed to come back down? And then they talk one special god that's supposed to come down. Because, see, the Hopi have something, they talk about the same sort of thing. That's what's really weird. They're all the Native Americans, even the Lakota I've talked to, the elders, they talk about the blue streak across the red sky and the blue star that's supposed to come close and the Bahana that's supposed to come. And then I read the Mayas and it sounds like almost like the same thing. And then I read about the Inca, it's almost the same thing. Well, if they're all saying the same thing, then hello. That's okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is very interesting because we, and when I say we, I mean the entire human race, have always had this incredibly profound fascination with each other and with other cultures, you know, even extraterrestrial cultures. And some of these books you do have to read with a grain of salt. I don't particularly take, you know, someone like Daniken to be a true authority on these things, because some of the claims are a bit outlandish, to be honest. And it's nice to believe that, well, you know, maybe there are extraterrestrial life forms coming to visit. And I'm not saying they're not. It's very difficult because, you know, you'd hope that by now there would be some kind of contact, right? But we still haven't had anything really world-shaking. You know, we haven't seen on the front page of the New York Times, hey, you know, President Obama is talking to the head of the Intergalactic Council or something like that. But that's not to say that, you know, those cultures don't exist. And it's possible that in ancient times there was some kind of contact. I mean, we just don't know. And so much has been destroyed when you think about the fact that the Spanish burned almost all of the codices and destroyed so much knowledge, and that the library in Alexandria in Egypt was burned to the ground by the Romans.
Yeah.
Those are irreplaceable, tragic losses to humanity. I mean, this is something that, you know, we'll never, ever have back. And right. So, because we can't travel back in time right now, there's just no way of knowing. And it's quite, as I said, it's very possible that there was some kind of contact, maybe even just visual. Maybe they just, you know, all of these cultures in Central America, if you think about where they are geographically, if there was some kind of ship or some kind of phenomenon that happened, they would have all seen that. And they would all therefore refer to the same thing, even without, you know, possible contact with each other. So that makes sense to me.
The reason why I find that I think there is a correlation, even though I think there has been actually inner contact, but I think I jokingly say it, but I think it's more like that. Maybe we're just like the Earth Channel, where they watch us as like entertainment. if you think about it, if I was like them and you were could fly through quantums of space and going through wormholes, and they would have to be highly evolved, so evolved. They look at us like they'd be looking like, you know, we laugh at people who are we laugh at the Stone Age, basically.
Yeah.
So, well, in reality, why would they want to be interact with us? They look at us like, you know, hello. And they, who knows what their system is, because nobody can hype, and who knows if they actually have interacted or not. That's quasi. There is actually evidence that shows there has been something outside, and I have see too many correlations. Like the Maya had said something about something outside, the sort of implying that the same thing with the Hopi. Then you go to the Middle East, you find the same thing with even the Bible. You see the same thing in Far East. You find the same thing in India, and then, like you said, things drastically were destroyed. Like you talk about the Library of Alexandria, which has elements of the connection with the Egyptian stuff, understandings, that was totally, you know, set back to us in the, you know, that really put us back in the dark ages for the, as far as Europe, actually. But there's just too much. And then also the philosophies and understandings of the universe. If you take, like, Taoism and you take the original and within Judaism, which is Kabbalism, and then you take Sufi Islam, and you take all these understandings and the original Christianity of Jesus, and you take all these understandings and you go to Native American, they all come to one little peg. They all say the same thing, and it's weird because they're spread out all around the world. It's almost like somebody dropped these things. And then all of a sudden, if you look in the America, humans, we've, in a very short period, our technology has drastically changed. So who knows what's being manipulated, but it just, to me, with the Mayan thing, I think that's what everybody has the fascination of. There's a link to 2012 right away. They think the doomsday, or you have the people who think, oh my God, that's extraterrestrial. And what I thought was fascinating and this is just going back to your book, is, oh wait, let's not even talk about just that. Let's go what their people lose the uniqueness of the Maya spiritual concept. It's people, which is really getting to what you're which is more important. And I think people get caught up in the nostalgic of certain things as opposed to the real reasons why utilizing them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And I think you said it quite right. Basically, we live today, right now, in this moment, right? This moment is basically all moments. And I think if we spend too much of our time thinking about, well, what's out there, and, you know, what's 4 billion light years away, maybe watching me on their Comcast channel, we're never really going to enjoy the experience of this life fully. And I think that's where the Mayan calendar and their experience with sacred time is really so critical, because unless you can fully engage in yourself and in your conscious waking experience, you kind of miss it. And you know what? Life is short, and we don't know what the other consciousness or the experience of beyond physical life is. And so we might as well just really enjoy it and get as much out of it as we can. And then on the flip side of it, there's also a little bit of personal responsibility. I think that, you know, if we just kind of throw up our hands and I say, well, I can't do anything about my current situation because it's destiny, or because it's written so in the Mayan calendar, or it's, you know, this is going to happen and there's nothing I can do, then you're basically saying, well, I don't have to do anything. I don't have to do the hard work of making myself a better person, or I don't have to do the work of changing my thought patterns and rewiring my neural pathways that I've, you know, in other words, the way I've been thinking for all of my life, to get to maybe improving my relationships or improving my relationship with myself. You know what I mean? There is some work, spiritual work, that we each need to do. And if we keep looking to the stars, it's basically saying, well, we don't want to do the work. We don't, you know, we want to lose weight, but we don't want to go to the gym. It's that same concept.
Right, right. It's just you put out the list of things, but you never really do it. But the other thing that I thought that you wrote in your book, and I forget where it was. I was trying to find it just now. I just know it. And you bring up about the life death situation. Like, is if, and this is like, it's sort of funny when you put this, because I do some consultations. I tell some people, because they're always wanting, they get caught up in stupid trivia stuff, and I says, listen, put down. What if I told you? Because it's more like I do readings. And I told them, I'm going to tell you, and not that this is for literal, I tell them because they freak out. I said, you're going to die in 3 days. How would you live your life then? What would you do in those 3 days? That's how you're supposed to, you should live. Like, you live to get the best quality thing and not get caught up in the trivia nonsense and try to improve yourself as fast as possible. You know?
And as profoundly as possible.
Yeah, and so that's how I look in what your concept is vastly trying to get the person, all of it, getting and transforming, like you said, the thoughts are things, and changing our perspective to actually a higher sense of reality, which is actually moving us what they call more clicks per second. So our perspective is more in unison of what the reality of the universe is. Because what we said, there's a thing they say, I remember in Taoism, they say, real truth is actually nothing changes. Our realities change.
Mm-hmm. So, I would say that's correct, yes.
So truth never changes because the system keeps on going. So our realities change by how much we increase, we improve ourselves. So if we lower ourselves, we create our lower vibrational reality. If we see things in a different reality, then we see we're heading to our closer truth of the reality. So being in that cycle, which you talk about with time element, puts us the time, it's the quasi time space element where we are living with those energies. But you know, I got one thing to read. It was really interesting. I just realized in those the explanations, the way they do, they're written, that you wrote in your book. It reminds me, I had a famous Kabbalist that I studied under years back in Israel. He's a holy man. They call him the Ma. His name was Rav Shimon in Kesaria. And I remember what he would do is, like, he would have people, like, sporadically put, like, dots on a piece of paper, count them, and then he'd pull up a book, and he had all these weird writings on them, like little paragraphs on them, and then he'd have the person read off the paragraph. And then based upon the paragraph was the energy he was talking about what's happening in your life right now. And it's sort of weird, because it was almost like when I started reading this is like what that was. It's like, I'm just arbitrarily picking up a thing, and it says, like, well, I'm not, it's, you... Probably I'm saying it wrong, but yuke something, whatever, and it says, like, the law of the jungle is ruthless. Some must die so that others may live, unforgiving competition. But reading this paragraph and stuff, it gives you, you personally mean something uniquely to you, and it's not necessarily the same to everybody else. So the way this, what you wrote here was really cool, is every day, which is obviously what you got from, I guess, the Maya, is to reflect, it's unique to that. Like tomorrow, when I read this paragraph for tomorrow, the way I read it may be a little bit different than how you relate to it.
And it should be, Andrew. And that's the exact point. I mean, when I was talking to Don Rigo and also Ken Johnson, who had a lot of, you know, he walked me through how the Maya actually interpret the calendar. Because I'm a writer, I didn't put any of my own ego into this book. I mean, this is... I hate to use the word channel, but in a way, all of these daily energies were channeled. In other words, what I would do is I would take each day and sit with whatever day sign that was, whatever number it was, and I would sort of first reflect on, okay, what is this number? What is it telling me? And then go over to the day sign and say, okay, tell me about yourself. I would just try to listen to those energies. And then you marry those energies, like I said, right, because it's a combination. So today's 10, ahau. So it's not just about 10, and it's not just about ahau. It's about their relationship. It's kind of like when you meet a couple, and you first talk to the wife, and then you talk to the husband, or the two partners, or whatever the relationship is. And then you meet them together, and it's a different dynamic. So the same thing here with the Tolkien. It's a different dynamic when you have the number and the day sign together. And that's what the daily energy is. But then I went a little bit further, because look at this. The day signs and the numbers are ancient, right? Mm-hmm. They have been around for, we don't even know how many thousands of years. But the energies that were interpreted back then, they're going to have a different impact on our modern lives today. So what I did was I interpreted them in the context of our stressful modern lives to try and bring some kind of meaning to people, and to try and bring the ancient forward into the modern so that people can actually improve or deepen or enhance their lives. But as you say, the point is, you are supposed, whatever you take from these energies should be unique to you. And in fact, if you want to rewrite the energies or reword it or reinterpret it yourself, please be my guest. That you know, this is just a guide. My book is not, I'm not saying that this is the only way to read the energy for the day, but it's a good guide, and every single energy was written with this spirit. So it's not about, you know, let's see how wonderful poetry we can write. It's about, what is this day sign? What does this number carry through? And what does their joint collective energy mean in the specific context of modern life? So this is what this book is meant to do.
Well, I got to tell you, it was a fascinating book. I mean, actually, it's really unique because just in the beginning, it's like a whole. You don't even have to write that many pages. It tells a lot of things of without even using the rest of the book of how to look in the realities of the way to approach our lives. But anyway, I want to thank you, Bridget, because I arrived at the end of our show, and it seemed like it went by really fast.
It did.
I didn't realize it. I go, wow, because it feels like I just talked to you 15 minutes, and I look at the clock, and go, oh, it's already 12. But how would somebody be able to contact you, and also how could they get your book and et cetera?
Well, it's really easy to contact us. I will give your audiences the website address. So it's www.maya-portal.net. And right there on the homepage, there are links to my book, also to Ken's book if they want to go deeper into the Mayan calendar horoscope system. And if you know, we always like to ask people to buy the book directly through CreateSpace, only because CreateSpace gives the authors a larger royalty, and so it's a greater support, and it's no additional cost to the actual customer. So CreateSpace is the platform of choice, but it's also going to be available very, very soon in ebook format on Barnes & Noble and Apple, and very soon thereafter the Kindle. So I'm excited about that because the ebook is kind of a halfway point between the mobile app and the book, the printed book. And then, of course, there's the mobile app itself, which is the MCP Mayan Solkeen.
I'm still an old book guy. I got to have it in my hand.
Well, you've got it. You've got it.
PDFs, and it's like, oh, I read PDFs like four pages. That's enough for me, I want to really thank you for coming on my show. It was extraordinary. Everybody, do get this book. I think it's very much something, you know, you putting this next to your I Ching, I'm just telling you, because it's something in that relevance. Personally, I think it's very important. And feel free to contact her directly and try it if you have any questions and stuff, and check out that calendar and even just play around with it and see where it takes you. It was the maya-portal.net. Once again, I want to thank you, Brigitte, for coming on my show, and everybody out there, thank you for listening. God bless you all, and have a glorious weekend. Thank you. God bless.